all it takes is one person to change the world. Everyone has a unique viewpoint and your idea matters. Have fun with it. Enjoy going out and taking your idea out into the world.
Hello and welcome to the Start, Build and Grow podcast. I'm your host, Rob Lawrence, and in this short podcast series, you're going to learn how to run and grow your business more effectively, gaining insights and inspiration from our panel of hand-selected coaches, mentors and experts in the enterprise community. In the next few weeks, you'll learn things to consider at the start of your business journey, how to run your business effectively, and tips on everything from finance to marketing to managing people and strategy to help you develop and grow a sustainable and profitable business. Before we begin and get stuck in, don't forget to follow and subscribe to this podcast through your favorite podcast player app. Hello and a very warm welcome to this first episode of the Start, Build and Grow podcast series. Today I have a very special guest, Dr. Ruth Flaherty, who is an expert in innovation, creativity and ownership in both online and offline spaces. She's published and presented internationally on copyright, trademarks, technology such as 3D printing, and is a member of many international networks in her field. She's a senior lecturer at the University of Suffolk, where she uses her research into the protection of IP to support SMEs and local innovators through her work with the Innovation Lab, where she provides advice on a one-to-one or group basis. Ruth has been heavily involved in the Start, Build and Grow program since it started in Ipswich, providing advice on company structure, initial liability concerns and IP rights. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today, Ruth Flaherty. So Ruth, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. So for our listener, maybe just a little bit of background as to what you do and who you are in the world today.
Okay, thank you. Well, I am a senior lecturer in law at the University of Suffolk. So I teach mostly undergraduates about things like ownership of property and intellectual property law and company law, especially. So how we set things up, how we own things, how we can make money from those things, which is all very exciting to me. My background is in creativity and innovation. So when I got started at the University of Suffolk, I was really interested in some of the stuff that they were doing in relation to innovation. Things like the Innovation Lab that they've got on campus and the work they're doing with the Business Growth Coaches Network to help local people, small, medium enterprises, local people setting up their businesses and making money from their ideas. And I've been doing that now for 2 or 3 years. So I'm really excited about the work that we've got to do together so far.
And I imagine with your experience and also the folks that you interact with on a daily and weekly basis, you get to see and hear all sorts about the challenges and the realities of trying to start up and grow a business. So perhaps we'll get into some of that today. For those that are really new, you know, they might be thinking about starting a business or maybe they've just started a business. What sort of things do they need to be thinking about, would you say, in those early days?
I mean, I've been fascinated by the way people think and the way the things they want to set up a business to do. So definitely early stages, what you should be thinking about is the value of whatever it is that you're trying to do. Mm. You're obviously very passionate about the product or service you're trying to offer. We've seen people with varied things such as patents for science, scientific stuff. We've seen people who are trying to set up businesses to run things, services online, for example. And these are all really good things, and you should be really passionate about your product or your service. And then it's about thinking about how you want to protect that. So how much in the early days you want to do in terms of things like spending time doing paperwork, especially, because there are some things that you really do have to think about at the start. So if it is a scientific product or if it's something that you think you might want to apply for using intellectual property, some of those are automatic, and we can have a discussion about intellectual property if you want, but some of them are things you have to apply for, you have to register for. So for those, you do really want to be thinking about registering for them quite early to avoid losing what's called novelty, where you have a date where your application is judged from. And if it isn't deemed to be new at that date, you might not get protected. So the problem with that, of course, is that you do have to pay to register. But the good news is once you've started the process, you are protected from that date. Hmm. So as I say, the passion that you have for your product or service, think about that and how you want to protect it. And then also think about how you want to set up your company as well, because that also has implications for things like, dreaded tax returns, as I'm sure we all know. There's always paperwork to be done. And so thinking about how you want to structure yourself and what it is you want to protect, I think, are the two very important things that you should be thinking about. Because you want to, presumably, you want to make money from your product, and you want to do that as soon as possible. So if you think about, if you do think about intellectual property and you do think about company structure as early as possible, that is the best way, I think, to make money from whatever it is that you're creating. Those are the two things I would definitely think about.
Yeah, that's great. So you've got me thinking about a number of things there. So without making any assumptions here, most businesses have a product or a service, and they certainly have things like a brand logo, not always in the first instance, but that might be something that somebody starts with. They've got an idea for a brand and some kind of design around that. You've got the website. Are these all things that you can protect? I'm trying to imagine how you would protect a service, for example. So is that something that you can register and lock your ideas in quite early on?
So first of all, I think there are two things that you spoke about there, which are really interesting. The trademark is a very important thing that you should be thinking about quite early on.
Right.
If you want to protect your brand, because it does protect you, in effect. It means that somebody else can't trade as you. You can register your business name, and you should if you're going to set up, for example, a company rather than acting as a sole trader. And that protects you to an extent. But protecting your trademark, registering your trademark online, and registering a website online, a web address, protects your brand. It protects the integrity of what you're doing, so that somebody else can't come along and sell under that name something that you might not want to be associated with, for example. So that's the first answer, I think. And again, this goes back to this idea of thinking about at the start the value of what you're doing and the costs of protecting that. Because to register for a trademark does cost money. You're looking at probably in the region of £200-ish for your first application, plus or minus £50 each for every category of good or service you want to register for. But it's worth doing at the start, I think. This is one of those outlay costs that you should probably set some money aside for if you can at the start of your process to protect yourself. In terms of websites, you can register your own website, and there are various international registries that you can do that for. For example, ICANN, ICANN is the international one. And again, that protects you from other people trading under trading on a website under your particular name. So that's the way that I would think about to begin with protecting, even if you're protecting a service, is using a trademark, protecting your web address so that people know who you are and what you're doing to begin with. In terms of services, there are some other IP rights that you can use to protect, but to begin with, those are the ones that you should be thinking about at the start. I would at this point also say that it is, and I'm going to sit here and I am going to say I'm in law, so I am going to say there is a value in speaking to a legal representative at an early point in this process to get some advice. Alternatively, you can speak to a business coach, for example, in the BGCN, because they can then talk you through this process as well to a general extent and let you know whether it's worth spending the money at this current point in time and what you should do, what the application process looks like, what the paperwork looks like in effect, because some of this paperwork can be slightly technical.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always good to have an experienced hand to walk you through it, because in my experience, there's often questions or terminology in there that's not that clear to somebody who perhaps hasn't been through the process before. So yeah, some great, great, great thoughts and ideas there, Ruth. So this is great. So you talked about registering a business, and again, it'd be easy to make some assumptions here, but I guess the government and HMRC need to know about you too. So what's what's the process there in terms of, I've got a business idea, perhaps I've got an idea for a product or service, I might have a company name idea. So what's my next step?
So your next step, I suppose, would be to decide how you want to set up your company. Mm-hmm. Because there are various different company structures or business structures, we say, that are recognised in England. You can start off as a sole trader, which is very simple. And all you need to do there is register for self-assessment for taxes and file a tax return annually. That has very low documentation needs. That's sort of where people start from. That's the most simple form of business structure. And all you need to do there is keep some business and expense records. And then if your turnover will be more than £85,000, you need to also file a VAT return. You can, if you're at that early stage as well, if you're not doing this alone, so what you can do is set up as a partnership instead, where there's one, or, you know, where there are two or three or how many of you. And again, a simple partnership is, in effect, the same idea as a sole trader, where you're filing individual tax returns using self-assessment and this VAT return if you are going to turn over more than 85,000. But you're doing that as a group of people. And again, that's fairly simple. And all you have to do there is nominate somebody to be the person that registers with HMRC and then file the same level of paperwork, in effect, including things like your business name, as you say, which it is important to think about at an early stage. The problem with those two business structures is that because they're quite simple, you are still have a level of personal liability for the debts of the business. And indeed, when you apply for funding, for example, if you apply for loans, you will likely be applying using your personal credit score. And it can have an impact on things like then applying for a mortgage later on, or, you know, some of these things personally, financially. So the other way of doing this, and the other thing that you might want to think about, maybe not right at the start, but certainly fairly early on, is having a discussion with everybody involved and potentially a coach about whether it's worth incorporating, whether it's worth setting yourself up as a company, in effect, with HMRC. Because what a company gives you is a separate structure, what's called separate legal personality, where the business, the company, is liable for the debts of the company. And indeed, it's the company that applies for funding. Obviously, they'll look at you if you're the director, and they'll look at all the directors of the company to see what the company structure is and what the company looks like financially. But because it's a separate structure, it gives you that extra level of protection, because what happens is that the debts go behind what's called a corporate veil. So you are no longer yourself liable. The company is liable. And this liability can be limited in a variety of ways, but mostly it tends to be just limited to how much your shareholders put in. So individual shareholders are liable just for their individual shareholding. And this can be really good because it means that you have that extra level of protection. And banks, for example, might be more likely to lend to a company because it has that level of protection rather than just lending to individual sole traders. The problem with that, or the downside to incorporation, is you have more paperwork requirements. Because you're incorporated, you then have to do things like you have to file separate tax returns, things like corporation tax, and you have to keep more detailed paperwork to send in to HMRC every year. So that's something you might want to think about, is do you want that level of protection? Are you likely to be applying for business loans or corporate loans as opposed to personal loans? And do you have the time or the money to pay an accountant, for example, to fill out that paperwork instead? Because that's really the distinction here. And that is, again, something that you would really want to go to a business coach about at first instance if you can't make a decision yourself, I think, to be honest, because they'll be able to tell you a lot more about the realities of what that paperwork will look like and how long it takes you to fill it out. Because that, of course, is another business cost.
Yeah, so there's all sorts of things to think about here. So paperwork, obviously, there's various entities that you might want to register your ideas with. You probably want to build a team of people around you. As you mentioned, you maybe want a business coach, probably looking at an accountant or somebody who can advise you on the accountancy side of things, as well as somebody who can support you on the legal side of things there as well. And yeah, it sounds like there's some sort of back-end considerations in terms of structure that might benefit you and your circumstances there. What else would you need to think about in terms of business structure perhaps in the context of the type of business that you might have, is there an appropriate structure for somebody offering professional services perhaps, or if somebody's got products, what sort of structure would be the right one to start with?
So we do see actually professional services do tend to be a specific type of what they call limited liability partnerships. So a lot of the professional services you'll see, the big ones especially, tend to be LLPs, which is a specific form of partnership rather than company. And it's sort of, they sit as a hybrid between the two, really. They are the more corporate of the partnership types. And again, it gives you some of the protection of limited liability and that you are only liable for the amount that you've paid into that partnership.
Right.
But it does have a slightly more complicated structure, and it does require you to have a distinction between the types of partner that are on, that are in the group. You'll have people that are allowed to make decisions for the partnership and people that aren't, in effect. It's an interesting structure. And again, for professional services, it tends to be the structure they use for a variety of reasons. But I would thoroughly recommend, certainly if you're setting up with a product or a service to begin with, it is worth starting with some of the more simpler structures or the more well-known structures, especially to talk with about your business coach about, because the boundaries of liability are known a bit better in those, and you can then get advice on whether to move into some of these more complex areas of corporation law.
With that in mind then, and given your experience and the journey that you see others take, what are some of the mistakes that you see folks making in the early days? What could someone starting out today avoid and maybe fast track their journey somewhat?
I'm not sure anyone ever makes mistakes to begin with. I think that that's probably a bit of a negative term. But the things that would speed things up, the things that would make this process more efficient for people, is definitely to have an idea of some of these things beforehand. So use some of the websites that are out there to begin with that give you advice on this sort of thing. So the BGCN has a website, and the government has a website on giving basic data on this sort of information on this sort of thing. It's worth having a read of that first. These things tend to be written for the layperson, so they you don't need a law degree or a business BSc to understand it.
Yeah.
And that would at least give you the scope of what you should be thinking about, because then you can go to these professionals and ask and say, I've read this, what does this mean for me? But also really being focused on what it is you're trying to do, how much liability you're willing to take to protect what it is that you're doing. Because that is the distinction here, is how much do you want to risk, in effect, to protect what it is you're doing. Some of that is things like the business structure that we've already spoken about. Some of that is things like the amount of intellectual property you want to use to protect your goods to begin with. Because some things, your website, for example, as soon as you've written anything down, as soon as you've taken any photos yourself, those are protected automatically by something called copyright, which a lot of people have heard about, but basically protects you against people taking your words, taking your pictures, and some other things, sound recordings, for example, if you have any videos. Like this one, for example, will be automatically protected, so you can stop people copying them. But trademarks, as I've said earlier, and patents and designs mostly require registration. So having an idea at the start of how much you're willing to spend on your intellectual property protection. Do you want to just rely on unregistered rights like copyright to protect yourself? Or are you willing to, and do you want to, and would it be valuable to spend the money on a patent application if you're doing something, and if you're doing something scientific, if you're doing something with a product, like a physical product that is an innovation, that has what's called industrial applications, what you need, but anything that has, in effect, a real life job as a product, you should maybe think about consulting whether you want to have that as a patent, because that protects you from anybody reusing the product for 20 years. You can stop anybody reusing that, in effect, recreating that product within certain limits. And for a product, that can be a very strong way of making money off your product idea. And is the strongest intellectual property right we have, realistically.
Mm.
And you can get injunctions to stop people reusing your product, or indeed you can sue them for damages if they do. So to start with, knowing how much you want to put aside for registration, for IP, for example, and I've already said that I think trademarks, you're looking at about £150, £200 for each application. Patents, you're looking at probably at a minimum £300, probably thereabouts. These things have exact costs, but there are always additional costs for how you're going to apply for them. And the legal advice you want to pay for to get around those things, because you should be trying to protect those things early. But again, as I say, they do have a cost which has to come out of the business at the start. Just beyond that, then, I suppose I'd sum up by saying knowing how much you're willing to outlay at the start and knowing what you want for that money. So knowing that IP rights are going to cost you money, but they are going to give you, that's where your product is making money, is if you aren't protecting your product, you risk somebody else pirating it. So knowing how much you can spend at the start to protect against that, especially given that, as I say, for some of these intellectual property rights, if you don't apply early enough on, especially with a patent, and you then sell the product without the patent, you can't then apply for the patent later.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've introduced the product to the market, it's no longer novel and you aren't going to be able to protect it.
Mm.
So I suppose that's the thing that I think people should be thinking about from the start.
Got it. Okay, so there's some important considerations there. These are things that some folks may not be thinking about when they're starting out with an idea for a business. And it sounds to me like there's some commercial value in protecting your ideas in the ways that you're describing there. So this is really good. And I imagine there's lots of help out there. And I'll put some of the links to the resources that you mentioned in the show notes so that folks can find out more information. But this is great because ordinarily, I guess, most people would go into business thinking about selling the product or service, but not necessarily protecting the assets that they would be creating in the business. So this is some really useful stuff. So with that in mind, what else do we need to be thinking about? So you've mentioned IP there. You've mentioned registering the business and the business name and the website with ICANN. Is there anything else we need to be thinking about in terms of, in those early days, locking in our ideas and registering our ideas somewhere?
So certainly registering with HMRC, registering your business name and your business structure with HMRC. Registering your trademark, that I think is, as we've discussed, how important that is. It's worth knowing that you can register your trademark in a variety of different ways. You can do that either just in England and Wales, or you can do that in Europe, or you can do that, there are ways of doing that a bit further afield. The issue with going broader with registering rights and patents, it's a very similar thing. You can register either here or broader still. The issue with that is you do have to be able to prove that you are trading in each of those territories, because otherwise you risk losing the right once you've trademarked it or patented it. So I don't know if you maybe remember, this is a bit going back a bit now, but McDonald's briefly lost the Big Mac trademark a few years ago to an Irish burger restaurant called Supermax, because Supermax could prove that although McDonald's had registered the right in Europe, they hadn't traded the Big Mac trademark in every single territory in Europe. So McDonald's lost the right. So it is worth thinking that you want to be able to say, oh, I'm going to trade everywhere. Oh, I want to protect this globally. I'm going to be, you know, the next big thing. But the problem with that is if you go too big too soon, you might end up with difficulties later on in terms of proving that you are actually trading in those places. Having said that, all you need to do to prove that you are trading in those places, I mean, it's not impossible to do. It's mostly a paperwork thing and a proof that you can, for example, deliver your product somewhere. So if you are if you have a delivery network, whether that's with any of these big logistics companies or a smaller company, as long as you can prove that you are capable of trading, selling your product in those countries, and your website is accessible from all of those countries, you shouldn't really have a problem. But it is worth a consideration, because if a big company like McDonald's can get it, can have a problem, you don't want to be facing the same issue. Beyond that, the other thing I think to think about in terms of protection at this point, is also you will need to do things like, especially if you are going to have employees, you will need to think about how you're going to pay those people and where the money for that is going to come from and how the structure of that is going to happen. So this is where you might want to think about, again, think about incorporation and businesses, because it is easier in some ways, at least, to pay employees through a business, and you have less liability for certain other things under employment law if you are a business. So that's the other thing I would think about, is going back to how to structure your company and how to structure your payment plans for your salaries for any employees you might end up thinking about having.
Yeah, so some other thoughts there in terms of if you're actually going to be employing people as well. And I'm sure that's a whole other conversation that we could be having on a podcast, I'm sure. But that's really useful to know. And there's some other thoughts there that are going through my mind, in the sense that even the really big corporations aren't exempt from having their own territory taken away from them. So what about these days, you know, GDPR and cybersecurity and all of that is seems to be super important. There's a lot in the news about it. There's a lot online. And certainly since the pandemic in 2020, with so many people working online now and so many commercial transactions happening digitally with information being shared everywhere, I can't imagine there's many businesses that are exempt from handling digital data in some shape or form. So again, for the startup business and the entrepreneurs out there, what do they need to be thinking about in terms of handling customer data and also perhaps GDPR and that kind of stuff?
So thank you. Yeah, this is actually another really important area that startups should be thinking about, because if you are buying and selling a product or a service, if you are taking any form of customer information, if you want to see if they want to be on a mailing list, for example, if you have an old-fashioned mailing list where you send out brochures, you know, we do still have snail mail in this country, but so whether that's an online email list or a broader postal list, if you are doing this, you do have to have the GDPR in mind, the General Data Protection Regulations in mind. This is the law that covers how we deal with people's personal information. And there are some exemptions to the GDPR for brand new companies and for small companies in terms of things like how long you've been trading and how many employees and your turnover. But those exemptions are very narrow, and it is worth being aware very early on. Because once you go beyond those, you are liable, you know, as every other business or company would be. And especially, of course, if you're set up as a sole trader, that will be personal liability. Obviously, with companies, you do have some liability personally. If you're a director of a company, for example, you can be found liable anyway for the for breaches. But you're more protected under a company structure. The GDPR, in effect, keeps everybody's data safe. It says, if I've given you my home address, if I've given you my email address, you have to keep that relatively safe. You have to do a variety of standard things that I think we would all think about doing anyway, things like password protecting your computer. If you have any customer data on your personal computer, you might want to think about, for example, storing things on a portable hard drive instead of on your laptop, if you take your laptop, if it is a laptop, out and about. Password protecting that as well, of course. And most of these things now come with password protection as standard or as a very easy default setting to set up. So that's something that you should really be thinking about from the get-go to get yourself into good practice with things like having data on your computer, and then it's just instinct to sign in. I have a work computer. It has a sign-in that I have to do. And of course, then changing the password every so often as also good data protection behavior. Once you get into further types of data, it becomes more specific as well, because if you are, for example, if your service is something to do with health, or if it's something to do with children's educational needs, special educational needs for students, for example, we've seen, that then is what's called sensitive data. Anything that's things like your sexual orientation, your medical history, for example, you really do then have to be really, really secure about how you deal with that data. Payment information as well. And that tends to be something that a lot of people, if you're buying and selling, you give out your bank account details. And you do have to keep that stuff safe. You have to be able to show that you have password protected, you have kept this in a way that isn't easily accessible, because you can breach the GDPR without having been hacked. It's about how you store the data. And one of the ways that you can do this, of course, and one of the ways that a lot of people do, especially if they're taking sales data, if they're taking, you know, if people are buying and selling online, one of the ways you can do this is, of course, by using a third-party payment app. There are several out there, Xero, I think, and PayPal, I think, is one that a lot of people would know about. I think Amazon might have their own variant. And because you've then used a third party, they're the people that are handling the payment data. So that then gives you a level of protection against liability, because you're not seeing the customer data then. All you're seeing is the order come in via, as I say, PayPal or whatever. So you don't then have the worry of handling the payment data, at least. But if you will have names and addresses and delivery information, definitely password protect. Definitely think about having a external hard drive or some other form. And things that I think become in everyday use now. We've all sort of got used to the idea of technology, and we wouldn't necessarily now carry around printouts of, you know, lists of customer data, you know, in a briefcase, like you would have done maybe in the 90s or the 80s, when everyone had a briefcase and shoulder pads, and way back when, in the infancy of technology.
Yeah, so quite a bit to think about there in terms of password protection, data security, encrypted hard drives, maybe even a safe, and yep. You know, just locking stuff away. Yep. Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot to think about there. And again, I'm sure there's a lot of information and experts out there you can connect with. But I think in terms of signposts, some great ideas there. Thanks, Ruth. So what else do we need to be thinking about? We've covered a lot today. We've talked about IP, we've talked about business structure, we've talked about GDPR and protecting customer data, and I guess that goes for suppliers too. Is there anything else we need to be thinking about from a legal point of view, and maybe from a company structure point of view, in those very early days for starting a business?
I think it's definitely a question of setting up good habits at the start for things like registering all your information, having all your information in the right place, especially good, as you say, good filing habits, whether that's online or in a filing cabinet. Filing cabinets used to be so old-fashioned, but you can now buy them. I put together a filing cabinet this weekend for my home office. You know, it's things that can be done now. I think just covering those things at the start is where I would definitely start thinking, because you've started a business, you've got a product or a service that you want to be getting out there. So I suppose the other thing is, there are one or two little areas where, if you're going to be doing things like, there's some science areas, there's some areas with children, there's some areas with certain types of products, where if you think that you're doing something that would have this level of sort of extra protection, so, or extra level of complexity, and again, a business coach would be able to tell you if this would apply, if you think there would be special things that would apply to you. If you're going to be selling food, thinking about things like health and safety at work and food protection, and making sure that you're meeting all of the sort of legislative requirements that you have to for your specific product. But otherwise, just generally knowing and being enthusiastic about the product you're selling, which obviously people are, but keeping that going and being sure about what you're doing at the start, and trusting in getting the good advice, as we've said before, whether that's a business coach, whether that's a lawyer, whether that there are a variety of places you can go, and going forward with it, being enthusiastic with it, being able to really communicate what it is that you're doing. One of the other things that you could be thinking about is things like, if you're not sure about how to write these things, do you want to start thinking about talking to copy editors and the like to really be able to write your ideas down better? These are, again, professionals that you could be linking to at a very early stage. Although, as I say, they do then, obviously, these are all costs that at the start you would have to think about whether you're willing to bear those at an early stage. Finally, I think it's worth having a think about what funding you can get at the early stages, because there is some really good funding out there, both from things like charities and local authorities and more broader governmental funding for small businesses. And so knowing what you might qualify for there is also something that you could be thinking about very early on, because there are pots of money out there that people don't know about. And that's where things like business coaches can help. That's where things like we have locally what's called the innovation labs that are being set up across East Anglia that can link you to sources of funding for your business or your idea. For example, banks might have small funds for their new businesses.
That's great. Yeah. So there's a number of things to think about and sort of balance off there. And I guess it all depends on what your idea is. Mm-hmm. So if you're in hospitality or retail, or maybe you're a website designer, there's going to be sort of various different trade associations I imagine you can connect with, which are going to be great in terms of connecting you with the right people. But then there's all sorts of other bits and pieces that you might want to do, not protect your business from a different point of view in terms of perhaps its credibility, as you say, making sure that you're meeting the legislation and compliance, I suppose. And then in those early days, when you've got some funding, you'll want to think about how to prioritize that funding, depending on what kind of product or service, I guess, you've got, and how you might want to invest some of that money in the ways that you've been suggesting today in terms of protecting your assets and your business and creating your business structure.
I mean, trade associations can be really helpful, and it is worth researching those at an early point as well, as you say, to see what help they can give you. Some of them can have reasonably high enrollment costs.
Right.
Although, again, they do sometimes do discounts for small companies, startups and the like. And they, again, might be able to link you with a lot of the people that we've been discussing today. So lawyers, they might have preferential rates with, and people that will be able to talk you through liability concerns. You know, they might have a compliance officer that they'd be able to signpost you towards. So again, that's a very good idea as well, yes.
Great. Excellent. So we're just beginning to wrap up now. Thanks for your time today, Ruth. I just wondered if there's any sort of final thoughts or tips that you might want to offer our listener. It's been a really insightful chat. There's a lot to think about, clearly, and it looks like quite a lot of admin and paperwork that's involved in the early days. But as you mentioned, you know, if you've got a passion for what it is that you do and some enthusiasm, hopefully that will see you through. But have you got any top tips in terms of top recommendations for people at this stage? They might find some of this a little bit overwhelming, maybe. What are your thoughts?
I'm aware this is the problem, that a lot of this can seem very technical very early on, and it can seem very overwhelming. And this is where, for example, having support either from a trade association or from a business coach or someone similar can really help to shoulder that burden of paperwork and of all these sort of requirements that you have to fill out. I would say the top tip is genuinely to remember why it is you're doing this. When you're knee-deep in a self-assessment tax return, when you're trying to fill out, you know, another form online, it is worth remembering what it was that woke you up at 2 a.m. and that's about whatever it is that you're selling, whatever product or service it is. And keeping that in the forefront of your mind to get you through the early stages and believing in that product, because we've seen some really wonderful things so far. And these things do matter, and you can change the world this way. Like, I know and I'm going to paraphrase the quote because I can't remember it off the top of my head, but all it takes is one person to change the world. Everyone has a unique viewpoint, and your idea matters. And it's just about remembering how then you want to protect that idea and how you want to put that idea out into the world. So I suppose just from an innovator standpoint, that's the tip I would have, is keep that going. Don't get so mired down in all of this stuff that you have to do. But also be aware of the stuff you have to do, because it is also a shame to, for example, not register your right early enough on. Try and then put a registration in and then have them turn around and say, I'm terribly sorry, that's no longer novel. So again, know who to go to, have some really good signposts, engage with products like BGCN and listen to podcasts such as these, and have fun with it. Enjoy going out and taking your idea out into the world. I think that's my top tip.
That's great. Thanks, Ruth. Very kindly pointed us towards some resources. Are there any favourite books or podcasts that you listen to or connected with that might be worth listening to for folks at this stage?
In terms of a list of podcasts, I think what I'll do is I'll send you the sort of list separately that we can put in the notes for this episode.
Great.
There are some really good books out there and some really strong guidance notes. And blogs, of course, is the other way of doing this.
Yeah.
Online blogs tend to be very helpful. So as I say, we'll put those in the episode notes separately so that I can actually have a chance to collate my thoughts on that topic.
That would be brilliant. Great. Ruth, I'm sure there's one or two listeners, if not many, that would love to get in touch with you. What's the best way to reach out to you and connect with you?
Certainly, you can connect with me via my email account. I am always happy to take email questions. That is r.flaherty@uos.ac.uk, and I'm sure we can put that in the notes as well. And also, I do have a LinkedIn page, which again I can give you the link for, and you can contact me on there. I'm rather active on there. Equally, I'm on Twitter, X. I do apologise, I should know better. I'm on x.com, and I am on Mastodon as well.
Fantastic. Every good reason to have a look at the show notes that accompany this episode. So, Ruth, thank you so much for your time and expertise today. It's been great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you ever so much. It's been wonderful to talk to you.
Well, thank you for listening to this first episode of the Start, Build and Grow podcast. And thank you to my guest, Dr. Ruth Flaherty, for sharing her expertise and knowledge with us today. In this episode, we talked about business structures and the different types of business structures and liability that you can have when starting out with your business. We also talked about IP and copyright, as well as GDPR and protecting your customers' data. To learn more, head on over to startbuildgrow.co.uk. This podcast project has been funded by the UK government through the UK Shared Prosperity Fund and Ipswich Borough Council. Start, Build and Grow is part of the BGCN Group. Discover more business growth, leadership, coaching and enterprise resources at bgcn.co.uk or email us at info@bgcn.co.uk.